Hello and welcome back to the first episode of 2025 and the first episode of season 10 of the LSEG Sustainable Growth Podcast, where we talk to leading experts about sustainability and finance. I'm Jane Goodland, and this week we're talking to Claire Brooke, who's the CEO of Blue Marine Foundation, Europe's largest marine conservation NGO. Now, Claire spent the first 25 years of her career in investment management as a true trailblazer of sustainable investment before moving into the NGO world 10 years ago. Now, I was genuinely excited when she agreed to come onto the show, and we're in for a treat. But before we hear from Claire, a quick reminder to follow us and rate us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any other platform you use. So let's hear from Claire. Hello, Claire. Thanks for coming on the show. It's so great to see you on what is actually a freezing morning here in the UK. So thanks for bracing the cold weather to join us on the show. Now, as I said in the intro, you've started your career in the investment industry before moving into the NGO world. I'm fascinated about your career. Can you tell us more about your journey?
Well, thanks, Jane. Thanks so much for having me. I started working in the sustainable and environmental investing industry in, well, when it wasn't really an industry, it was very new back in 1990. And we were pioneers, really. I was working with Tessa Tennant and Mark Campanile back at Jupiter on the UK's first green, as they were called then, funds. So this was really the genesis of what's now known as positive or impact investing. And we worked at Jupiter for 4 years, and then we moved to NPI, where we set up the Global Care range of funds. And we had a great time in the late 90s because our funds outperformed mainstream funds by a long way. So we really were making the case that environmental investing in these industries of the future that we term them then, these solutions to the problems that we're now all too familiar with, but were less talked about then of the climate crisis and so on, that these investments were outperforming the kind of latent industries that they were set to replace. Then after a brief spell at Henderson, where you and I nearly
coincided. You left there in 2000. I think I then joined in 2001 or something. So I think, yeah, it's fair to say that our careers have been in a similar orbit, but we've never quite overlapped, have we? So you went off to Aviva then at that point.
That's right. So there, the team and I established the Sustainable Investment Division at Aviva. And what was exciting there was not only did we have a whole range of funds dedicated to investing again in these industries of the future, but we were engaging on the entirety of Aviva's funds under management. So typically we would be among the largest shareholders of any of the FTSE companies, FTSE 250 companies. So we were able to engage with real authority and influence there. And we helped to bring about, I think, a major shift in the level of environmental reporting in the early 2000s then. In 2008, I co-founded Web Asset Management, WHEB Asset Management, which is a startup. It's now thriving, I'm very happy to say, under the team that were working with you at Henderson. And that was an impact investment organization investing in, again, solutions to climate and investing in these emerging industries. But come 2014, I'd been in that whole world of sustainable investing for 24 years. So I took the decision, rather strange decision in a way, maybe not the most financially astute decision, given that I'd set up Web Asset Management, to leave and join what was then a very small NGO called Blue Marine Foundation.
And why did you do that? Because that is an interesting pivot, as some people say, in terms of spent your life doing sustainable investing or various different forms of it, you know, entrepreneur, set up businesses, etc. And then in 2014, you think, I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm going to go and join a really quite small NGO. What was the motivation?
Well, partly impatience, because I think over the course of the time that I've been in sustainable investment, I'd watched all the indicators that we're all too conscious of: the level of warming, biodiversity decline, parts per million of CO2 going into the atmosphere, growth of the fossil fuel industry, all of that, just all going the wrong way. And while I felt that sustainable investment was having an impact, it was like we were moving the dial. It was too slow for my liking. And by the way, I think this is still the case. Yeah, I mean, you and I are talking, we're looking out at frost in the UK, but LA is on fire. You know, we are at a point of crisis in the world. And so I think just dial moving, getting better reporting, setting up kind of nascent industries is clearly not enough. So that was one motivating factor. I really wanted to do something much more impactful within a faster time frame. And when I first encountered Blue Marine Foundation through my friend Cindy Ford, it seemed to be so fast-paced, such an incredibly dynamic little charity that was having a huge impact in ocean conservation. They were pressing for the creation of marine protected areas that can be seen from space. They were engaging, shifting models of fishing towards sustainable fishing in a really proactive way. And it just struck me as such an incredibly exciting place to work. And I kind of couldn't resist.
Well, that's always the sign of a really good job move, isn't it? Is this, it's just, you can't not do it. So tell me a bit more about Blue Marine, because you've been there for 10 years now. So presumably it's changed from what was then a small charity to, I think, like one of the largest European NGOs in conservation, right?
Yes, we've grown 12-fold since.
On what metric is that, by the way?
So it's grown from a million turnover to £12 million turnover.
Which is, I guess, also a kind of a representation of how much interest there is in the topic that the foundation is active on, right?
Oh, absolutely. Because what Blue Marine is doing is that we're addressing one of the world's most serious but least addressed environmental crises, which is the destruction of the ocean through overfishing. And why does that matter? Well, because the ocean is the source of all life on Earth. It's the largest carbon sink on the planet. It provides us with half the oxygen we breathe. It regulates our climate. Without the ocean, the Earth would be 36 degrees warmer. But it can only provide these vital functions by dint of the life within it. And what is going on at the moment is through huge industrial scale fishing, we are systematically emptying the ocean of that life. So we're destroying vital carbon storing habitats, we're destroying all the fish stocks, we're destroying, therefore, livelihoods and food for people who need it most, who rely on seafood as their main source of protein. And that's being carried out in a very senseless and wasteful way. So Blue Marine is working on getting much more of the ocean placed under protection, free from this industrial scale fishing. And we're doing that by pressing for the creation of marine protected areas. But we're also tackling the worst excesses of overfishing in various different ways, using different techniques like investigation and the law.
And that's where I'd really like to understand a bit more about the techniques and the tactics that you use, because I think from those people who aren't working in NGOs, you know, understand that they see Greenpeace and they see WWF and they see lots of different NGOs, but they don't all employ the same levers or techniques. So for example, I'm keen to understand, are you engaging on policy? Are you taking direct action? Exactly how do you, what are you doing day to day to kind of deliver on your mission?
You're quite right. So no, we're not scaling buildings, as it were. But yes, we are absolutely engaging on policy. And that can take many forms. So you can talk to politicians direct and to government officials direct, or you can urge the public, so the people who vote for them, to make them care about it more. But we also use the law quite a lot. So either reminding countries that they have a legal obligation to do something, but if need be, actually take legal action against a government. We're engaged in on a couple of fronts at the moment. And then there are things like media and awareness raising through film. Blue Marine was born out of a film called The End of the Line, which I would urge anyone to watch because it's still very relevant, although a lot of progress has been made since the film was made in 2009. It's still a great film drawing awareness to the extent to which the oceans are being plundered.
That's really, really fascinating, and I think we should all watch that film. Let's just be really clear, though. What's the ultimate mission of Blue Marine?
So our mission is to see 30% of the ocean protected by 2030. And the good news is that that's also the world's mission, because 196 countries have signed the Global Biodiversity Framework that happened at Kunming, Montreal in December 2022. But signing up to a framework is one thing, implementing it is another. And unfortunately, the amount of ocean that's actually protected at the moment is about 8.3%. So we've obviously got a massive gap between the amount protected and getting to 30 by 30. So Blue Marine's role is as an agitator and an enabler, really, to persuade countries to protect their territorial waters, at least 30% of their territorial waters, and, as we were talking about earlier, to make sure that the high seas are protected, so areas beyond national jurisdiction, which cover around two-thirds of the ocean.
So a lot to do in the next 5 years, from 8.3 to 30%, so you're going to be busy. I just want to clear up something, I suppose, because when we hear the terms ocean protection and conservation, I think that maybe some people may come up with this image of marine life wrapped in a bit of plastic or something like that, because that's on our screens a lot, isn't it? But can you just talk to me about the relative threats that the ocean is facing and why you guys are so focused on the fishing side of things?
Yeah, sure. So threats to the ocean fall into three main categories. First of all, we're putting too much of the wrong stuff into the ocean. So plastic pollution, exactly as you say, but also agrochemical pollution, sewage, microplastics, runoff from car tires, et cetera, et cetera. Then we're warming them through climate change. So the ocean is not only a kind of solution to climate change, but also a victim of climate change. And through the action of drawing down carbon, it's becoming more acidic as well. So that's another major problem and threat to marine life. And finally, we're taking life out of the ocean far faster than it can regenerate. And so it's on the over-extraction of life that Blue Marine is focused. And we have other fantastic colleagues in the NGO world who are focused on these other threats.
And having said that, though, I think it's really interesting if we can just explore the connection between climate change and ocean health, because we do talk about climate change a lot on this show. So it'd be good just to make the connections between that. So tell me a bit more about that.
So the ocean absorbs carbon through all sorts of mechanisms, but really by dint of the life within it. So whether that's whales or microalgae or habitats or the ocean floor itself, it's all drawing down carbon all the time. And it's really at the cutting edge of science to try and understand how those mechanisms work, but above all, the extent to which the ocean is drawing down carbon. Because if we understand that, in fact, the seabed is storing far more carbon than was previously recognized, then anyone who is fishing using a technique that is disturbing that carbon or ripping up the habitats that are storing so much, then that is clearly not only appalling from a biodiversity point of view, but it's appalling from a climate point of view. So we are funding a science project, thanks to Convex Insurance and in partnership with Exeter University, to quantify the amount of carbon that is stored in the seabed itself. And we had hope that that will be a bit of a game changer.
But that, I'm so curious about that, because when you think about how much collective energy and attention and science and effort and policymaker time is put into climate change mitigation, adaptation, management, understanding, if the ocean is the world's biggest carbon sink, why then are we not seeing ocean protection and conservation being a much higher profile mitigant and kind of focus of policy within the climate change debate?
Well, I think partly because it is a new area of, developing science. It is quite cutting edge. And so this understanding is only just developing, and particularly the quantification side is very nascent. So although we can quantify, for example, how much carbon mangroves store, something like kelp is still, much, much more uncertain, let alone fish themselves. Fish have a function whereby they eat at the surface and then pass the carbon down through kind of pooping and a sort of cycle of life. And it's incredibly hard to measure that, because how many fish are in the sea? They move around. How does it work? So like a lot of nature, it's rather beyond human comprehension. I think until now, we've operated in these quite linear approaches to industry and commerce and so on, without taking into account this incredibly complex mechanism that is the natural world.
Yeah, I mean, it's so incredibly interconnected and linked that, like you say, it's almost beyond human comprehension, which is a worry in itself. Let's move on to the role, you just mentioned commerce. Let's move on to the role of finance in particular. I'm curious really about what role that sector could play, because we really are starting to see the finance sector mobilize around climate change. Now, people could say it's not quick enough, it's not big enough, there's a massive investment gap, which is of course true, but what's the potential for the financial sector in the context of ocean health and not ocean protection? What could we see, for example?
Well, we could, and we are seeing some really interesting developments around things like blue bonds, debt for nature swaps, a blended finance facility to support marine protected areas. There are investment-based mechanisms, for example, in venture capital. So the founders of Blue Marine Foundation, George Duffield and Chris Girl-Barnes, have set up something called Ocean 14 Capital, which is designed to invest in early stage companies which are solutions to the biodiversity crisis in the ocean. So there's lots going on. It's early stage, of course. It needs to be bigger, of course. But we at Blue Marine have set up something called Blue Economics, another division of Blue Marine, which aims to look at the whole way that the ocean is currently valued, which is basically on an exploitative model. So the so-called blue economy is really all geared to transport, to energy, so oil and gas or offshore wind, fishing, of course, tourism. But all of those activities have a greater or lesser extent, an extremely damaging impact on the health of the ocean. So what we'd like to see is a shift from this exploitative model of how we interrelate with the ocean to a protection model, which is, complicated. So we've got to find a way of valuing the services that the ocean provides, so biodiversity and carbon, in a way that can be kind of invested in, if you like. And that is definitely easier said than done, but a lot of very brilliant people are working on that, and we're trying to work on that as well.
It sounds fascinating, and I would encourage those working in investment firms to maybe check that out, right? Because that could be really interesting if we get more people thinking those terms and looking at kind of this nascent area of the market. I think we're probably up for time, but again, this is such a fascinating topic. We could go on. Can we leave with just a few final thoughts, I suppose, for what people listening might think, yes, but what can I do? You know, actually, I'm left thinking, wow, this is big and huge topic. So are there things that you would advise individuals can go away and do?
Yes, absolutely. So I think one of the problems is, as we've touched on, is that politicians aren't feeling the urgency of this crisis. I mean, arguably of the whole climate crisis, but also the crisis in the ocean of the mass extraction of life. And so anyone who really loves the ocean and cares about it, I would urge them to write to their political representative and tell them that you care about it. Tell them that we need to ratify the High Seas Treaty, that we need to move faster towards 30% protection of our territorial waters. You know, get engaged and get political about it. And that's, you know, really important thing to do, because politicians don't think we care. Secondly, if you work in finance, we'd love to talk to you, because, as I say, Blue Economics was set up really because I left the world of finance and joined the world of NGOs. And I was quite surprised that in the world of NGOs, on the whole, people aren't thinking that much in terms of financial solutions to these global problems. And in the world of finance, with some exceptions, of course, people aren't really addressing the crisis in nature and the need to make a massive change to the way we're responding to that. So via Blue Economics, we're trying to explore developing financial mechanisms that will change that. So, you know, do drop us a line, as it were. And finally, if you or your organization would like to make a donation to Blue Marine Foundation, we'd be thrilled, because, you know, that would always come in handy.
Of course. So I suggest that people go and check out your website, because I'm sure that there's lots of information on there. Can you tell us what the website address is, please?
BlueMarineFoundation.com.
Well, there you go. That's super simple. No reason not to check it out. Thank you so much, Claire. It's been fascinating. And I think what you've dedicated your working life to is incredible. And I want to be able to help, and I want everyone else to help. And you're doing amazing work. So keep it up. And thank you.
I have a very fascinating job every day. Thrilling.
You do. And thanks for sharing that with us today. So thanks very much.
Thanks, Jane.
That's it for this episode of the LSEG Sustainable Growth Podcast. I do hope you enjoyed that conversation with Claire. I personally found it really, really fascinating and eye-opening indeed. If you've got questions, comments, or someone you'd like us to talk to, then do get in touch by email at fmt@lseg.com. That's all from me, but watch out for the next episode of Season 10 very soon.